Committee substitute for House Bill 5. Lacking a quorum, we'll stand at ease. First item we have before us is Committee substitute for House Bill 5, Finance. And you'll find in your packets a new committee substitute. I thought there was one. A new committee substitute that deletes the second section, which is the debt service section. Kind of a consensus in looking at the overall picture that we will in fact fund the formula program at the 100% level. There's some discussion ongoing about priority one schools and school debt service, and we'll leave that if we adopt this bill until a later date. In order to do that, we have to rescind our action in adopting and passing out of committee committee substitute for House Bill 5, Finance. So I will make that motion at this time and ask if there are any objections. If there are no objections, then I'd like to move that we adopt as our committee substitute the 2491 UDMO draft that deletes the school debt service. And I'll move that we adopt it as the bill before. Any objections? Without objection, any committee members have comments on the bill? If not, I'll seek a motion to move the bill out of committee with individual recommendations. Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move we report out with individual recommendations the committee substitute for House Bill 5. That's unanimous consent.
Without objection? The substitute for House Bill 5, Finance, has moved out with individual recommendation.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
My pleasure. Okay, next on the... Yes, that's it. Also note for the record that Representative Jacko has joined us. On the agenda today, we're starting with department overviews, and the first department that we'll have up is Department of Revenue. Commissioner Fisher. Since this is an overview, we're going to allocate 15 minutes or less for overview comments, and then 15 minutes for questions for each department that we have before us, and we'll adhere to a fairly strict timeline. Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I've asked Nancy Bennett, the Director of Administration in the department, to accompany me. As most of you, I'm sure, are aware, my tenure in this job started well into the budget process, and as a result of that, Nancy, along with the Acting Commissioner Bill Forshinger, had this budget probably in 75-80% completed status by the time I came on board. I therefore ask her, as a person both experienced this year as well as in prior years, to take the commentary on the general overview and the philosophy that went into it. I have reviewed it in depth, have been working with them in recent weeks on it, and certainly find it to be a budget that, in my opinion, we're going to be able to work with. So Nancy, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I also want to remind people when they're testifying just to state name for the record. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Bennett with the Department of Revenue. The adjusted base, which the department started with in the preparation of our budget, was $53 million in all funds, and that was $32.5 million in general fund, including the share taxes program. The allocated reduction given to us was 4490.8. Of that, the COLA reduction costs were 488.3 in general funds, 746.9 in other funds. OMB also allocated a cut of $3.3 million to the fisheries business tax. That left us with other reductions totaling 205.3 in general funds from the department. One of the things that we did do was to protect the Child Support Enforcement Program and the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, largely because the ABC Board has been historically underfunded, and Child Support this year is facing the final year for implementation of welfare reform and are facing increased program standards that they're going to have to meet beginning, well, actually it started in October. We had one general fund increment for the management of SBS funds, which we covered through a fund source change for the Child Support Enforcement Program. In the past, what has been titled General Fund Program Receipts is now entitled Federal Incentives. And that was a total of $820,000. Addressing item number two on the agency format, we do not anticipate any legislation will be needed to implement changes in our budget because the share taxes program has been retained in the front of the budget. So even though we were allocated a reduction for the fisheries business tax, since it's in the front section of the budget, we will have the authority to share out all the money that we collect. We have not deleted or reduced any programs, and we have not expanded any programs either. There was a change in position between the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which transferred 9 positions, 8 of them to the Permanent Fund Corporation and 1 to the Science and Technology Foundation. These changes were basically so that the Permanent Fund Corporation could initiate their international investment program. Do you want to speak to the capital budget request?
With regard to item number 5 of the agency overview format, the one capital budget item that we are going to recommend is approximately $150,000 for a voice system. At the present time, there are many repetitive questions that come into the Permanent Fund Dividend Division that we believe can be handled by this voice system that will allow a caller to punch a number at a point in time that is their particular question. We believe that this can become cost-effective and personnel-effective in the years to come.
I also brought with me a sheet of paper that specifies out the additional cuts for 2% in personal services and 10% for travel. This is an additional 655.7 from our budget, 248.8 of which is general fund. And this little spreadsheet breaks it down by BRU. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Baldwin.
Thank you very much. I wonder if you could just briefly go through the fisheries business tax information again. I'm not sure I quite understand what you're doing with that in this budget.
Representative Ulmer, let me try it, and then perhaps Nancy will correct me if I am wrong on it. The state of Alaska has a fisheries tax in the statutes that we collect. We then share that fisheries tax with a particular municipal or governing local body. And I believe that the administrative costs of that fisheries tax comes out of the state's share, and a pure 50% goes to that particular body. That, so it's an in and out. We are a collection as an agent, in a manner of speaking.
Nancy?
That's correct.
Except the cost of administering it isn't a state cost. That comes
no,
out of the
not.
Revenues generated.
It's a general fund cost.
Okay.
We don't receive any administrative costs.
So you're not proposing a change in the policy, the administration of it, the distribution of it. You're taking it out of your operating budget so that it doesn't show up in your budget, but it's not being changed in any way?
All of the share taxes programs have been in the front of the budget for the last 2 years. We show them in our budget for informational purposes only. There are estimates. We use our crystal ball, you know, to figure out how much we think the taxes will be for that year. OMB had initially allocated a $3.3 million cut to the fisheries business tax, but I think we convinced them at the DIVIC hearing to leave it in the front of the budget because it would take a statutory change in order to not share the money back with the community.
Thank you.
Representative Lars.
Yes, thank you. I guess on the same question here, are you anticipating collecting less revenues under the fishery business tax this year, or I guess I'm not understanding here your reduction.
I believe that's what you just tried again.
I know, but I didn't get it.
No, that's, I understand.
This started quite a while ago. OMB asked us to change our estimate for the fisheries business tax, which we did. Any estimate that we make, of course, is always a guess depending on the catch, the price of the fish. And so basically they use the amount of money that we put in our revised estimate as our allocated reduction for this formula program. But in fact, it's not going to happen because it is in front of the budget. And the language states that whatever amount is needed for the share taxes program is appropriated to the department for sharing. So whatever money we collect that needs to be distributed to the communities will be, as long as it remains in the fund budget.
Okay, I understand that part of it. I was wondering how it related to the agency's budget, so that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopanen.
What is the rationale for the cuts in other funds, from other funding sources, and those that do not affect the general fund and therefore the state's...
The cost of living increase was not funded for anyone, regardless of funding source. And the 2% personal services reduction and the 10% personal travel reduction were allocated across all components.
That's an explanation of what you're doing. I want to know what the rationale was.
Well,
for
I
it.
Didn't make that decision, so...
Well, the rationale, let's start from the 2% cut on personnel. That was a mandated request by the governor's office that we take such cuts and that we cover COLA. And then as far as the travel is concerned, that was a consensus of, I certainly participated in that decision as a commissioner, that good management would allow us to easily cut 10% off of travel expenses just simply by managing.
Not a rationale, that's a... Never mind.
Sorry.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In a couple of places through the budget, there are funding source changes proposed, and I'm just curious about the one that's proposed here in this budget, child support. Are you certain that does not require statutory change? A number of them do.
We cleared that with OMB under the program receipts bill that passed last year. Because these are federal funds, this fund source change is not applicable to being a statutory change. So, as you know from looking at our budget in great detail, Representative Brown, for the last few years, the child support program receives federal incentive funds based on the ratio of their AFDC collections to their overall expenditures. And this money comes and is restricted in the general fund, and then the child support program has that money appropriated to it. The rest of the money just remains in the general fund for regular expenditures. They have, for years, been receiving far more incentive funds than they have been appropriated to them.
On the summary sheet that you passed out, where you have general fund target reduction summary, are you listing things there in that list other than general funds? You show the 858.6 child support in that list.
Because we changed it from being called general fund program receipts to calling it federal funds, we were allowed to use that as part of our general fund reduction.
So just to note that this is just a smoke and mirrors type reduction and doesn't really change anything would be my assessment of what's going on here, as well as the reduction proposed in the shared taxes. Would you agree?
This
yes.
is true.
Yes.
We also had a general fund increment of 387.6 for the SBS management, which was denied, and we covered that amount of money and in our target amount. So essentially, we gave that much more.
Mr. Chairman, I was curious about Ms. Bennett's opening statements where she said we haven't deleted or reduced any programs. In the summary material we got earlier, it showed that there were 10 positions, 8 full-time positions being eliminated. in your proposal, where are those positions eliminated, and how are you able to not reduce any programs with elimination of 10 positions?
No, the seven of the positions were in the two audit programs, five in income and excise, two in oil and gas, one in treasury. Actually, we just today have been finishing the PACS rerun for the 2% personal services reduction. I haven't had a chance to sit down and analyze it yet, but it looks like we're losing closer to 20 positions. And I can't really speak for the Kushner, but I believe that we are planning some extensive reorganization within the department. OMB has promised us that if we complete our reorganization by July 1, they will not take those particular PCNs that we have identified and zeroed out in PACS, but that we can change them to other PCNs. Essentially, we zeroed out positions that were vacant right now so that we wouldn't have to lay people off.
Have you analyzed at all how much money would not be collected in the audit programs as a result of the reduction in force?
I don't believe that that's an analysis that's even possible. An auditor in a given year, dependent upon the cases that are assigned to that auditor, might, if they were a large group of small local corporations, bring a small amount of revenue into the state of Alaska and yet handle 50-some cases. On the other hand, an auditor handed a large multinational-type corporation might not settle anything in a given year, might go 2 or 3 years and then have a $100 or $500 million case. So to say that each auditor is responsible for deriving so much revenue into the state is a very difficult thing to quantify, in my professional opinion.
I just note, Mr. Chairman, that in the past, the Department of Revenue has justified new positions to the budget with exactly that type of analysis, showing historically what auditors collect over time, and that if the body's not there to collect the money, and if we have in fact a policy of in certain tax programs just not doing any auditing or any enforcement, that more revenues would be expected based on how many auditors we have out there shaking the trees and trying to get the money in the door. So I think Ms. Bennett's probably familiar with some of those reports that we received in the past from your department.
I cannot disagree with what you have just said, other than I stated my opinion on that sort of thing. You certainly can take the amount of tax that's generated and divide it by the number of people and come up with a figure. If that's a meaningful figure, I have yet to be convinced of that. Perhaps I will be.
Thank you.
When do you plan to have an updated number on the shared taxes, what that number needs to be?
Well, I believe the number that is in there is the number that our personnel has stated is their best estimate. That's all it is. We don't know what the fish catch is going to be in 1992 or the price, and that's how that number comes up.
Okay. Exactly.
So one of the points that came to my attention during Ms. Bennett's comments here. I just finished reviewing a report with regard to CSCD and our hearing officer section. And in the time frame 1986 to 1990, those hearings increased over 300%. There was a even larger increase, as I remember it, of hearings pertaining to the permanent fund dividend. In 1986, the backlog of cases sometimes included matters that were 3 years old or older, as I have heard it. In 1990 here, the average case is resolved in 3 months' time, and the backlog is just simply not a problem. This, I believe, is the direction that I feel we should be heading in the way of efficiencies and competency and professionalism. I feel that that is an example of what I hope to do with the income and excise as well as the oil and gas divisions. So it can be done.
And thank you. I just have one other comment here on the shared taxes. It's shown in the budget as a decrement, but it could in fact very likely end up being an increment. Just as likely as
this
not.
This is true. And of course it is in our budget for informational purposes only.
Yeah.
Representative Lars.
Thank you. That was going to be kind of my comment. Move it to the front section of the budget. You don't need to associate any special dollar sign to it, and therefore you can reduce the budget.
I take the comment was made earlier. It's a smoke and mirrors thing. I really wonder what it's doing in the budget as far as Department of Revenue or any other agency.
What I was going to mention, Mr. Chairman, is we're going to be setting up the Revenue Subcommittee meeting for next Monday, and we'll be getting in contact with you folks.
Representative McClellan.
Yes, I do have a question. Under the Department of Revenue budget, you have an increment for, under the Permanent Fund Corporation, for equity manager fees of a little over $2 million. Could you explain the rationale behind that?
I believe that these fees are all related to the international investment, which is a new program that the Permanent Fund Corporation has gone into. These manager fees are directly related to the investments that they make. They also have an increment for an international investment staff.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, Commissioner Nancy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch. Next department we have is Department of Commerce. Commissioner Olds.
Chairman, as a newcomer in this role, I'm asking Guy Bell, who is the administrative service head who prepares most of the detail, to join me, if I may. Mr. Chairman, I was given, helpfully, six critical questions. I was told that our outside time was 15 minutes. It's a little under 3 minutes. I'm grateful to started as a professional fighter. I know the kind of punishment you can take in 3 minutes. But I'll try, if I may, quickly and briefly to telescope what might otherwise be said. Hopefully the two documents that we have provided you, one by the department called the Department Overview, and a second, I probably ought to even apologize for. When I came about a month ago, it seemed to me clear that what was needed in our department, indeed, was a strategic plan, some overview that could be measured and monitored. And what you have are the elements of that strategic plan that have not been fully fleshed out, but only useful as a kind of suggestion. It opens with a critical view of the changing environment. I believe the events in the Gulf, the transformation of Eastern Europe, and the sudden openness at the end of the Cold War with the Soviet Far East are critical elements that will impact in a very dramatic way on the role and the future of Alaska. In terms of the state proper, we are addressing in overview the effort at the diversification of our economy with value-added features to our implicit natural resource capability, and an accent on Alaska proper. The impact of science and technology in the new day. We will open up the Arctic Sea for the first time year-round this year with the advent of Soviet technology in the double-hulled ice-breaking fleet of the Soviet Union, which will impact on the capability of our barge traffic for the whole of the Arctic North, which will, in a very dramatic way, impact on the movement of our goods and services and Alaska's new role in that new strategy. Paradoxically, the softening of our relation to the Soviet Union will have now opened the airspace over the Soviet Union, which will eliminate Alaska, principally from heavy passenger traffic. But as I say, paradoxically, it will open, in terms of the surface traffic in the Arctic North, a new dimension. That's more than enough to just hint at the changing environment and its potential impact on us. Second has to do with the development of the case for Alaska. It's my observation that Alaska has been marketed essentially vertically, and our issues are essentially horizontal. We are marketing fish and lumber and oil and gas, and our supportive agencies are vertically organized and structured, and we've had very little cross-cutting integrative effort to see the relationship of different aspects of our government agencies and our economic development. And I have been asked by the governor to try to help to integrate in the cross-cutting, of transportation, natural resources, and other features of our economic development in terms of the value-added capability and the marketing of those. In terms of the mission of the department, I've tried to put it in five simple propositions, and they are fleshed out, not fleshed out, but hinted at in the document you have. One is to create a climate that is supportive of and facilitating the prospect of economic development. It's my view that these agencies should not be the enemy of the state or the people, but they ought to be the servant of the people and of the processes that we're developing. They should be user-friendly. They should be helpful in creating that kind of climate. Second, we are bent on identifying new opportunities for economic development, and we have suggested a range of them. Third, we need to attend to the infrastructure essential for the partnership of the private and public development of Alaska. Paradoxically, in the opening of the West, as we all know, the infrastructure was sustained and created by the gift of land to the people and to the railway and to the instruments of transport. And it was then presumed that the private sector would be able to develop the capability of economic opportunity, and then by taxes would be able to afford whatever political and or social services the government might provide. In Alaska, as some of you have heard me say when I was here before, we have less property in private hands than they have in Red China and the People's Republic of the People's Republic of China and the Soviet Union. If one views the native land allocation as private, and in one case that is possible, then the only significant private property in Alaska is in our native hands. The other, I made mention in Anchorage last week, I had heard it was 3%. Someone told me I was wrong. It's 0.3% in private hands. Therefore, as an owner state, we have to be sensitive to the fact that the land itself is not owned by the people in the generic sense of opening the West, but it's owned by the government. And therefore, the state has an obligation, it would seem to us, to help in the development of the infrastructure that makes possible the development of an authentic private sector inside for Alaska. And the native corporations and peoples will play an enormously central role, we believe, in the unfolding of that economic promise and possibility. Fourth, we have an obligation to develop Alaska's unique role and model in public-private partnership for this reason, and you'll see there more suggestions of unique opportunities for innovation and also for integration. And finally, as you will know, and that answers now, I can answer one of the six with a sentence. The governor is proposing, and I have strongly recommended, that the International Trade Office be returned to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Knowing a little about the international arena, it's almost incredible that if you have three or four different delegations and different representations arriving at any door in the Soviet Union or in the Pacific, it's very hard for them to discern what is the message or who is in effect negotiating this. This permits us to integrate and focus and consolidate international trade as the natural counterpart in the exploration of markets for economic development and integrating that with the domestic side and the Alaska development. Well, that's more than 3 minutes for the first general overview, but if that's been an adequate umbrella, I can be substantially more brief on the other items. The second item were what changes or reductions in the budget have been made. You will know that our total funding is $73 million, $58 million of which comes from the general fund. Of that general fund, $21.8 million is for the power cost equalization and fishery enhancement tax formula, which leaves us really, we're talking about an operating budget, from my point of view, of $36 million. The general fund request is approximately $2 million below the FY91 authorized level. And in addition, as you know, the department has absorbed the 5% COLA increase, which is $760,000. To summarize, the reductions or changes that we've sustained are a 2% across the board reduction in personnel services. We have not applied that across the board, you understand, but that was our share of the reduction, and we have specified in all respects where that has come in the material you have. A 10% across the board reduction in travel. You already heard from Commissioner Fisher about that general proposition. All of the other reductions have been programmatic in nature, and we've tried to describe them in the overview that you have. Our basic philosophy, and I'm sure that was the intent of the governor, is to make these reductions in a way to minimize the impact on the services delivered and or the policy, and to try wherever possible to boil down and or consolidate the administrative cost of the delivery of that system. In an analogy from my other incarnation as a rock farmer in Vermont, it takes 40 gallons of sap to get a gallon of maple syrup, and there was a presumption that it might be possible in the distillation of functions and services to reduce that. In terms of the increases, I asked, in the midst of all of this, I didn't expect a honeymoon, but this was my introduction to Alaska this time. I asked Guy if we had, was there any chance to increase anything in the budget, and he reminded me that the Alaska Energy Authority has asked to increase the general fund program receipt authorization by $957,000 to reflect the first year's cost of operation of the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, and Bob is here and would be able to respond to that if there were questions. A fifth question had to do with organizational change, and I've already mentioned the change of in Executive Order 79 to move the Office of International Trade from the Governor's Office back to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and the budgetary transfer would take place by budget amendment. And finally, the question was whether any major reorganization would be entailed that might affect the department. I can only say that with the exception of the movement of international trade, I'm at first blush, I have to become better acquainted with the divisions, and I'm only on 18 commissions and boards. I tried to calculate if I attended all of them with fidelity, there would be nothing else, no time left to do anything else. So I'm trying to sort out and see whether all of these boards and commissions, whether some of them have any connection. If I may be privileged, one final comment. I've attended two of them, one on the Alaska Housing Finance Authority and the other on the Alaska State Housing Authority. In the one commission, we were trying to figure out how to market 4,000 units in Alaska that are part of the product of our banking disaster that have come up belly up, and we're trying to market them at a low cost on the market. In the State Housing Authority, I said, what was the price of the last low-cost unit that this authority had responsibility for building in Alaska? The stewardess came back to see if I'd had a heart attack on Alaska's flight. He said it was $150,000 a unit in Bethel for low-cost housing. I'm still in a state of shock. I said, you know, this is so absurd, I can't imagine how this could occur. I mean, I'm a commissioner. I couldn't afford $150,000 house. I mean, how could the low-income housing? I said, have you talked to the housing authority that are really marketing some properties that must have been part of, the economic slump and dislocation and so on? And have you referred to research and development, to the University of Alaska and some of the other places, to see about developing a new Arctic house that low-income could provide, economically sound and environmentally sound and so on? And, I shall not comment except to say that I'm in my modest way, trying to ensure that some of these vertically organized commissions and boards and so on are also talking to one another horizontally to see whether there may be ways that we can improve the economic development of Alaska and the human resource capability by those devices. I'm happy to report that both of the directors have reported to me they've been now talking about how this might be done, and that we're also now going to have a kind of a, I suggested a modest, I spent half my time with pull tabbing, whatever, I didn't know what this was all about, but as a matter, if we're pulling tabs, let's have a little contest to have the best design at the lowest cost for Arctic housing. And I said, I'll even find in my own pocket a few, you know, a lollipop or two as a prize for that. Let's come up with a kind of a new venture. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that is an effort to answer your six questions in the time allotted. And now I'm happy to respond to questions, and I'm sure that Guy will probably be the person to whom I refer if the questions are of a kind and order and at the level of specificity that I'm really not prepared yet to do.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a lot of questions, most of which I'll hold for the subcommittee, but one pretty large gaping hole here is the short funding for power cost equalization, which I figure is about $6.2 million short in your proposal. I'm just wondering what's your thinking there? How do you prioritize that item? And what specifically do you propose to do? Are we just going to fund it until the dollars run out, or is there some statutory change contemplated, or what do you have in mind?
Can I ask Guy to speak to that, please?
I'll make a try. My name is Guy Bell. I'm Director of Admin Services for the department. The budget you have before you is basically the fiscal year 91 authorized budget for the power cost equalization program. If the program were to be funded at that level for fiscal year 92, the Energy Authority would, by statute, under the statute, prorate the power cost equalization payments to utilities downward by about three-quarters of the full funding required.
So it's about 30%?
25%. Well, the difference between 15 and $21.2 million. The estimate is $21.2 million based on the current cost of power in Alaska.
And I guess normally how we've viewed adjusted bases in the past is that you anticipate the growth in the program or the number of people that would be drawing upon it and give us an adjusted base that includes the program growth as a matter of course. Why was that not done in this situation?
The Alaska Energy Authority did submit a fiscal year 92 budgetary increment to reflect the full cost of operating, you know, of the program. That is not included in this budget, but the material that you have before you does indicate that increment and the amount of funding that would be required to attain the full funding level.
I thought I had recalled that that had been addressed in general conversation in the recommendation, I guess, when the Energy Authority comes in separately, does it?
That is correct.
So that's just a policy choice that you made, I presume, to try to reduce the overall level of spending?
Well, it was, Mr. Loresh can speak to that. Since this is the first year that the Bradley Lake power will come online, the question of what the impact of that might be in terms both of utilization and actual cost will certainly be a factor in that cost equalization program. And it was thought preferable to have the Energy Authority that was dealing with that, as well as the larger issue of the equalization, bring in the recommendation.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd just like to say that I think this is an excellent overview, both in terms of description of the changes and the comparison over the years in terms of funding. I think it's a really quality product. I am trying to discern what is happening with the various positions that are being reduced. As I went through the budget, in the summary, I noticed that there are a number of positions that are being eliminated: occupational licensing, insurance rate analyst, bank examiner position, ARDER staff, et cetera. So I was looking for the total number of positions that are being eliminated, and yet when I look on page 6 that shows the permanent full-time position comparison, the difference between FY91 authorized and FY92 governor shows an actual increase. So I'm wondering if you're adding positions in some places, and I haven't found references to those. I'm wondering which divisions.
I have a painful recollection that 7 of those are in Seattle. Am I correct?
Well,
I'm a little, you know, I don't quite know how I should perform here in this arena. I may be, you know, commenting in ways that are imprudent, but I raised the same question, and my recollection is that the seafood marketing has 7 of those positions in Seattle. Am I correct?
I think there are 5 positions added by the Seafood Marketing Institute in Seattle. Within the budget, there are, within the Seafood Marketing Institute, through a transfer from contractual services, an increase of 7 positions, and within the Alaska Energy Authority also, through transfers and through reflecting actual positions that were hired this year to manage capital projects, an increase, I think, of 7 positions as well. That 7 for the Energy Authority also includes some relating to the full operation of the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project. So with those increases and the reductions that are made as a result of budgetary decrements, there's a net increase, I think, of 3 positions from fiscal year 91 authorized.
Okay. Thank you.
We can provide the committee with a complete list of the additions and reductions in positions, if you would like.
I'd like to.
personnel basis because of those reductions for the household members.
I think we'd be happy to provide that. I'm not sure we could tell at this time, unless Mr. Laresh, if you would wish to probably comment on that directly, he heads the Energy Authority.
Madam Chairman, Bob Laresh with the IPA. Basically, to answer both you or Representative Brown's question, the way we were required to calculate the adjusted base this year could require us to ignore both the carryover, which we used last year, which is about $3 million, plus the increment caused by fuel prices changes this year, which is another $2 million. So basically, the increment we requested on top of that adjusted base was $6,338,000, which does not appear in the budget. And Representative McClain, best we can calculate now is that if that full decrement or that full increment were not added, it would cost every PCE eligible household an average of about $203, up to the highest impact would be almost $500, $480 more or less, depending on where the family lived.
Okay.
How much power they use.
Would that be on an annual basis or monthly?
That's an annual basis.
Annual basis. Thank you.
Representative Copeland.
Yes, I noticed there are reductions in the Public Utilities Commission are significant, and part of the reduction will be drawn from contractual professional services. I had believed that part of the intent of the administration was to make greater use of the private sector, and this seems to be marching resolutely in the opposite direction.
Mr. Chair and Representative Copeland, I'm really, I can't plead ignorance for too much longer, but I'm puzzled personally that so many of these agencies report through me to somebody, but I'm discovering I have virtually no authority over them, even their budget. So I played no part, I have to say, not by disavowing their proposal, but in this exercise, and I don't believe I have any authority, as I understand it, with respect to those commissioners. And I can't really respond very helpfully to your question. If that is the case, I would think it's appropriate to be raised with that commission. And
we do have that possibility in another area. We have statutory requirements for bidder preference for Alaska bidder in order to help the development of Alaska manufacturers and the like. But it seems like that. A relatively small program that the Division of Business Development has, and the Buy Alaska program and the Product Preference program, has not met the need, partly because it's too small, and it would seem that eliminating the program would require a little eliminating the statutory preference, too. Are you going to be presenting? Is the department or the administration going
well,
to be
I've already, in the, there's one of the requests, of course, that's still under the review of the governor in the capital investment side. The governor has announced to the cabinet, and I've been strong to reinterpret that capital does not mean, you know, Washington monuments and so on. Capital investment has to do with all of the features that you suggested, the enhancing of our economic capability and so on. And in that respect, a top priority is to reinforce that very purpose with the ARDER program and our rural Alaska development programs and Make Alaska. So if the result of this exercise has been to cripple or retard that program, we will have another review in the internal realignment of our budget, because from my point of view, as a new commissioner, that's a high priority.
Yes, I do have a question for Laresh, Mr. Laresh. On section 19 of Governor Hickel's budget, there's a power development revolving loan fund that's been put into the general fund, and what will be the impact of this to the power development loan fund?
Madam Chairman, every year so far, the power development revolving loan fund has been empty financially by the city. In recent years, most of it has been reappropriated to energy authority capital projects, generally in rural areas. But in any event, that fund has never been allowed by the legislature, nor has it been recommended by us that fund approve any. Basically, what this would do is
after
the point as
usual.
Okay, thank you.
Representative
Boris. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Owles, could you, and I'm sure you've only been here a very short while, and you may not know, but perhaps your assistant might, the Buy Alaska program, the funding that is in here, where did those funds go to in the past?
I believe Representative Barnes, they went to Make It Alaska Incorporated in the past, but I can...
Mr. Chairman, if I might, do you have an idea what Make It Alaska spent that money on?
I can speak to a couple of things. One was a catalog of Alaskan-made products. The names of the manufacturer of the products they produced and their addresses. It was just a catalog that was distributed throughout the state to businesses and other individuals who may be interested in buying Alaska-made products. I'm sure there are other activities, but I can get you more detail on this.
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would like a little more detail because I'd like to know if we were paying salary to people out of this money, and if so, who was it, and that sort of thing. I'd like to have some idea of where the money was going, as if it was really generating selling of products that were Alaskan made.
Representative Barnes, if I may comment in general, as I've said to our staff, if you can't measure it, why treasure it? I'm trying to develop a strategic plan so you can see if you're making any progress.
If you
allocate something, I'm sorry that I can't present that at my first hearing, but you can be assured that that's how I will administer the department. And second, I am concerned that, I'm repeating what I said at the outset, but I'm concerned that our efforts at selling the state, if I can use that language, or marketing the state, has been so segmented in its format that we have not been able to put our whole foot forward, if you will, in so many of these arena where we are operative. For instance, I've said to the head of our tourism, we should not just be selling a visit to Alaska in our tourism proposal. We should be selling the products of Alaska and the prospects of doing business with Alaska. I don't mean to muddy or confuse. The tourism accent can be carried, but we should have, in my view, out of our department, we should not have any brochure or whatever that only celebrates one segment of our state. Because the ignorance of Alaska is so terrible, I have to say, you know, here in Washington just confirmed it, that our hope is that Make It Alaska and these other elements that may have been, what shall I say, single-driven considerations, we intend now to make them more comprehensively inclusive of what I've called the case for Alaska that ought to be central to any component of our state that we're trying to develop.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say to you, Commissioner Owles, that I certainly agree with the emphasis that you're placing on it, and I do believe that we can better utilize all of our dollars in that manner.
Thank you. And we'll get back to you a report on this specific item.
Thank you.
Representative Jackal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, in answering Representative Barnes' question, you somewhat answered my question, and I wanted to get more detail on your case for marketing Alaska. I was wondering if the integrated marketing effort would result in less effort on any one segment of the resource side.
No, I would like to hope that it would reinforce it. It's a question of, for instance, one of the items that I think is coming into the supplemental budget is the World's Fair in Seville in Spain in 92, which will come under the budget suggestion or request of tourism. But as I remarked to our staff, the fair. It'll be the largest world fair in our history. It will celebrate the 500th anniversary of Columbus' discovery of America. I happen to be personally involved because, if you'll forgive that footnote, I made a speech in Washington where I said, you know, this tired and old Atlantic version of the discovery of America is so obsolete, I'm embarrassed that you're going to have a World's Fair about it. If you want to have a World's Fair on the discovery of America, you start 35,000 years ago in Alaska. And I told the story of Alaska at no price to Alaskans at that time. And in the process, discovered that there was a total ignorance, really, of the whole history of, hardly anybody's read Michener's book, and therefore the ignorance is just endemic. Now, if we do have an exhibit and so forth and so on in Seville at the World's Fair, we ought to tell the whole story. You follow me? The whole story of Alaska in that setting, its product and its founding and so on, and not just the tourism ticket, if I can use that language. And that will be true with respect to other features as well, because there are a lot of things that piggyback on marketing our fish. I've talked to Commissioner Mala. I know I'm married to a Nebraska girl, but, you know, beef is now having a tough time because we know from a medical point of view that the fish products have had a very significant feature in reducing the health, the heart disease problems of a lot of the big red meat eaters and so forth and so on. And I've said to Mala, we ought to be piggybacking health considerations and other considerations of other of our agencies when we're talking about marketing fish. I don't know whether I'm speaking your question, but that's, I would hope that we could, how shall I say, we might not affect a substantial reduction in our budget in that manner. I would hope we would get a much larger bang for the buck. We'd get a much more significant impact for the dollars that we're selling, that we're spending now to market Alaska.
The following question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. That somewhat answers my question. I agree that Commissioner Cook is kind of difficult to get through. I also wanted to ask a question with regards to your comments, your opening comments, and you referred to the amount of private land in the state of Alaska. There seemed to be some doubt in your mind as to whether or not the native land allotments was private land. Can you expand on that?
No. I meant that that in the conventional pattern of opening the West, the property, the Homestead Act, and other actions gave the property to private to single or private individuals, whereas, as I understand the native land settlement and the land process, it was given to a people and not to persons in their separate fashion, and therefore it's a different kind of model. I did understand it was private in the sense that it's not governmental land, but not private in the conventional sense in which the Homestead Act and the other actions that opened the West would have described private property.
Thank you. I just wanted to clear that point.
And I wanted to also expand the notion without prolongation that I think we have not, in my view, fully enlisted the private initiative vis-a-vis that property and land and the critically essential role that the native population will play in the economic development of the future of Alaska.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Barr.
Just prior to the Commissioner leaving the table, for those of you that were here last year and had Moose 101, I'd like to give this packet to the Commissioner.
What's 101?
I left with both of my chin and out of ignorance on this matter. This is private. Footnote to the moose. I know more about moose.
Next department that we'll hear from is the Department of Administration. Commissioner Keller.
Chairman DeVar, Chairman Plain, I'd like to also bring a couple of my budget wheel horses along with me. Kevin Brooks, who's Director of Administrative Services, and Mike Maher, who's Deputy Commissioner. We presented a brief outline for your review of our department, and I'd like to quickly go through that. The first page is an organization chart. I wanted to, most of you are familiar with the organization of the department, but I wanted to point out a couple of things that have changed, that I have changed. The Division of Labor Relations used to be a report through a deputy commissioner. I have identified that division as critical to the overall strategy for the next 4 years in terms of accomplishing a lot of the objectives regarding labor relations, the collective bargaining problems that will always confront any organization that has to bargain with as many different units as a state or local governments do now as well. And in my judgment, that is such a critical part of management, of organizational management, and it affects all other departments that I wanted that to report directly to me. First of all, I might also say that the department has two major responsibilities. One are the normal, what might be considered traditional bureaucratic functions of government, and those are shown on the left of the org chart. The other responsibilities in the Department of Administration are direct social service programs, of which there are a great number, which I'll get into later. Those are shown on the right-hand side of the org chart. Each is reports through a deputy commissioner. The next page is I won't go into detail, but I can leave it for your information. I have the names and the phone numbers of all the division directors, a brief outline of the functions of that division, also showing quickly when you look at the middle two columns, whether it's a service provided to state agencies or whether it's a service to the public. And then on the divisions that actually have an internal relationship, some of those are pointed out, but that's more just for information. If you want to get into questions on that later, that would be fine. The next chart is a pie chart, which shows, and the reason I presented is that it broke a misconception that I had about what the Department of Administration was, in that I considered it, when I took the job, that you were running the conventional bureaucratic part of government. The top pie chart is the current year's budget, FY91, broken down by the amount of the budget that's devoted to the various functions, the broad functions, the services to the public, and the services to state agencies. The bottom chart is our request, our FY92 request. So on the top is just a comparison. The bottom pie chart, you'll notice that 70% of our budget is not for the traditional bureaucratic functions, but it's for the services, the social service programs that Department of Administration provides. About 27 or 28% are for the normal bureaucratic functions. Leasing is shown as a separate category because we are proposing to change the way leasing is handled to make it actually respond to a conventional marketplace type decision. The services internal to the department are approximately 1.2%. With regard to leasing, I just to expand on that a bit. Right now, all of the leasing costs are contained in the Department of Administration budget, which is fine as far as identifying what the total cost of the lease is. Unfortunately, the leasing decisions are made by 14 commissioners. And it's my judgment and the philosophy that we've implemented in this budget that a good market decision on getting the best deal on a lease will only be made if you suffer the consequences of a bad decision. So in order to make sure that you benefit from good decisions and are punished by bad decisions, in my judgment, the leasing responsibility for each department has to be handed to that department. So we're proposing to do that, and in budget amendments, we'll present the transfer of the leasing cost from Department Administration allocated out to individual departments. We've already started in December presenting a list of all leases to each commissioner, all leases they currently have, expiration dates and the details of that lease, and notified them that that the expectation is that they will reduce, each one will reduce their lease costs by the amount necessary to bring about the reduction we're after, which I believe is, I can't remember the percentage, but it's
86% on the dollar, or 86 cents on the dollar.
So about a, you mean 14%? About a 14% reduction. The next page shows how the budget is distributed by division. And we're comparing the dark bar is general fund, and the light bar is the total for each division. And you'll see longevity bonus and pioneer benefits are the by far the largest single budget entities in our divisions, in our as far as the budget for that division. This one is just, I think, is more for details in terms of comparing one division to another and what the relative costs are for a particular division. The next bar chart shows a number of positions by division, again, in a format that you can see the distribution of positions. You'll see out of the 1,150 or so positions that almost half of them worked in the Pioneer Homes. So as you go down, you'll see the public defender, for example, has a major number of positions. That just gives you a flavor. Down at the bottom of the chart, I've shown what the current number of positions are in each of those divisions. So you can tell by the number at the top, for example, in Pioneer Benefits, that we're reducing 10 positions in Pioneer Benefits. And as you go down across each chart, you can see what the change in positions will be. The next chart shows the relative changes in funding and positions over the last 6 years, 6 years including FY92. The general fund for the department has been relatively stable during those periods, and the number of positions has been relatively stable during those periods. Individual programs, of course, we'll see pluses and minuses, but the general trends in the department for the last 6 years have been relatively stable. Regarding our decrements and increments, we will have a net reduction of about $5.6 million and a deletion of 41 full-time positions. Our major decrements are in the longevity bonus, which is a $504,000 below what is currently funded. So this would be less than the amount that was appropriated last year for the longevity bonus. We intend to accomplish that by raising the entrance age to 67 years old and reducing the amount of the bonus by 5%, or about $12.50 a month. The Older Alaskans Commission has a decrement of $297,000. It also has an increase in federal funding that recovers all but about $100,000 of that. So their net reduction in the amount that they'll have available for grants and so forth is only down about $100,000. Most of that will be absorbed by streamlining the operation rather than reducing the grants. Commissioner's office will have an $84,000 reduction, including a reduction of one full-time person. Administrative services will have three persons reduced. Personnel will be reduced $220,000. We also have presented an executive order to transfer the EEO function from the Office of the Governor to the Department of Administration, and it will be located, and currently is, from a reporting standpoint, reporting in the personnel department. We're convinced that this not only will improve the EEO program, but will make it possible for us to achieve some other savings, because some of those EEO, some of that EEO expertise can be used in the personnel department as well. So we see, although that the EEO transfer didn't result in, I think one of the positions is involved in a savings there, the rest of them are existing personnel functions. We're reducing one position in labor relations, two part-time positions in finance, the leasing, decentralizing the leasing, will. We also did some reorganization of responsibilities. Leasing will still provide the people to do the leasing negotiations, and just that we won't get involved in actually determining and managing leases to the extent that we have in the past. The retirement benefits reduction is primarily due to a change in program receipts. Up until this time, retirement benefits the funding has been viewed as a general fund, and I believe the legislature has already dealt with this issue in the past and recommended that that be changed. We believe that it should be changed because it is not a general fund obligation, and the department, we're proposing a new funding source called Benefits Systems Receipts for these funds. This probably could be, this savings or this decrement could probably be classified as a smoke and mirrors type adjustment. It does, however, reflect what we consider a much more proper way of classifying that funding. The Public Offices Commission is being reduced by $115,000. We also are introducing legislation that has been suggested by the Public Offices Commission regarding streamlining their activities. I'm convinced that this reduction will have no effect or possibly may even improve the operation and responsiveness of the Public Offices Commission, regardless of the weeping and gnashing of teeth that have been and hand-wringing that's gone on about that particular item. One of the things that we're proposing, by the way, is at the present time there are 90 communities in Alaska that conduct elections. And 90 of those communities, because of the thresholds on APOC, require candidates to report information about their campaigns. The disclosure part isn't the problem in this case. It's the campaign reporting. A simple change that says if you don't spend over $1,000 on a campaign and you don't raise over $1,000 for a campaign, you will not have to file a campaign spending report. Will reduce the number of communities and again the paperwork that has to be processed from 90 to 30 communities. It will also reduce the 90 to 30, in my judgment, absolutely trivial information that the Public Offices Commission is now maintaining that has no benefit, does not result in any improvement betterment of the public good. So I'm convinced that these changes will actually improve the quality of the work that comes out of the Public Offices Commission. The information services reduction is coupled with a couple of significant management changes that we're proposing. One is, although we probably won't be able to accomplish it in FY92, is the implementation of a full chargeback system for data processing services. Part of our reduction here is going to be offset by interagency receipts, which from our responsibility is going to require a sales effort to increase the amount of services we provide. We're going to have some kind of enforcement mechanism to make sure we can collect from the people that benefit from those services. My suggestion that we hire Rocky to go out and bust a few knuckles when people aren't paying their bills wasn't very well received, so we decided that rather than but there is a problem here in that it's a system that's easily abused by people who can sign on to a terminal, and we don't know that you've increased your use of the mainframe until you come and ask us for more disk space. Maybe I shouldn't reveal that secret, but you can get away with murder as long as you don't need more disk space. Obviously, we can tell if we have a chargeback system, and we can send you a bill for your increased use of the system. I think that will also bring about better judgment, just the same way we did in leasing. If you have to make, as a user, a conscious decision that this application I'm going to put on the mainframe is going to cost me $100,000, and I might be able to buy a PC for $5,000 and do the same thing, then chances are you'll make the better decision. But if it's free, it's just like the electricity. If you don't have to pay the electricity bill, you'll leave them on all night because it doesn't make any difference to you. But if you are paying the electricity bill, you'll shut the lights off on the way out. So that's why chargeback system is essential in information services. The RATnet reduction is clearly a benefit of being able to offset what was an operating cost as a result of a capital investment that was made. Once the earth stations are installed, we're reducing the leasing costs for renting the facilities that were required. The Public Broadcasting Commission is taking a substantial cut. In my judgment, it's going to require them to the commission to spend a great deal of time scrutinizing where their grants go, making sure that the people who receive the grants are also participating through some kind of local contribution and not being essentially benefiting from the grant but not having to pay for the service. Already described on leasing, we're looking at $820,000 reduction in leasing and the strategy as to how we hope to accomplish that. The final is the Child Placement Review Board, $500,000. This program, as you know, was established last year to solve a problem that exists in Department of Health and Social Services regarding foster care. In my judgment, the creation of a program to supervise a problem in another department had a different solution. And my solution, and in talking to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, was to solve the problem in Health and Social Services so that it wasn't necessary to have an oversight board observe the problem and report on the problem. The pledge I've made, and in conjunction with Commissioner Mala, is that his pledge is that the problem will be solved so that the complaints, that any real complaints that occur in the foster care program in Health and Social Services will be reduced to an acceptable level. I don't think in any program that we can set a realistic public policy that will never have a complaint or that will never make a mistake. There will be problems, but all I'm saying is, and pledging to the sponsors of this legislation, is that we will come up with a better solution through living up to our responsibilities to make these programs work. We'll come up with a better solution than the Child Placement Review Board would have accomplished. And I consider that a sincere pledge, so that because I, in making that pledge, fully expect to act in an ombudsman capacity if necessary to intercede with the Commissioner of Health and Social Services if there are problems with those programs. And I've told the people, the foster care advocates and sponsors of this, several of the legislators that were involved in this legislation, that in the event that they don't believe I'm living up to that pledge, that I would fully expect to hear from them about it. On the increments, we are putting an increment back into the longevity bonus program to fully fund some costs that in the past have not been funded adequately, and in fact have actually required them to take money out of the bonus itself. And these are simple things. They're key punch, the data entry costs, and now the postage. 4 cent increase in postage, by the way, when you're mailing out 20,000 checks a month, amounts to a substantial increase in postage. And the neighborhood of, the postage bill itself is in the neighborhood of $6,000 or $7,000 a month. So the 4 cent increase is a substantial increase. Kevin will work the numbers for me, I'm sure, if you have that question. In Pioneer Benefits, we're increasing the budget for the Pioneers Homes. We're reflecting what we see as a rapid increase in the cost, although the costs in the Pioneer homes have not been increasing as fast as healthcare costs generally. They have been increasing. We also are recognizing that the Pioneer homes are now becoming fully licensed nursing care facilities. They all have all the Pioneer homes have waiting lists for nursing care and empty rooms on residential. A trend that will continue, and we expect within a few years that will be primarily what the Pioneer homes are nursing homes. We're concerned about that because it has dramatic implications on future budgets. And as you know, the current law allows the state to charge. In fact, the legislation, most of which has been on the books since the early 60s, expected that the state would charge the full cost of care for staying in the Pioneer homes. Right now, that's $6,000 a month if you receive nursing care, and $2,000 a month if you live in the residential side. We have to look at that. We have to look at the alternative of going to a full cost of care system. Not with the idea that anybody will be thrown out, because nobody will be thrown out. The qualifications to go in will be exactly the same as they are now. But we're going to be faced with being able to collect from an estate as a way to help pay for the Pioneer homes. And the seniors that I've talked to, Pioneer Home Advisory Committee people I've talked to, surprisingly enough, that most seniors expect to take care of themselves in their old age. They don't want, in fact, many people who have very, very particular interest in the Pioneer homes don't want the state to take care of them. They want a Pioneer's home that works and is a good place to spend your last few years, especially if you have to go in and need nursing care. And I think we can maintain a program that any of us would be happy to go into if we ever reach the point where we need nursing care, or any of our friends or relatives need nursing care. But we're going to have to recognize that is going to be an enormous expense. The Public Defender Agency will see an increment of about $250,000. This is a problem which I'm sure all of you have seen. It's a constitutional obligation we have to provide legal services to indigent defendants. We are going after the caseload problem. We think the court is far too lax in presenting that in determining indigency, and we intend to introduce legislation to strengthen that as well. We have a similar increase in the office, and for the similar reasons for the Office of Public Advocacy. And finally, in central duplicating, the postage increase will require an increase of about $25,000.
Thank you, Chairman.
That's the loose presentation.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a lot of questions about this budget also, but I'll hold most of them for the subcommittee. With respect to the information services and the implementation of the chargeback, are the increments to account for the $1 million of service that's not carried in your budget, are those actually showing up in anyone else's budget at this time? In other words, the agencies that would have to pick up that cost if you don't carry it here, are they showing that in their budget submission?
We may do it in finance, I'm not sure.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. My name is Kevin Brooks. I'm the Director of Administrative Services. The budget that we built for information services was based on projected use of client agencies and on requests they had brought before us. But in many cases, those were before the budget reduction scenarios that everyone is going through now. So. We would like to offset our general fund reductions with IA receipt authority. We don't really have a good feeling on how much of that we'd be able to collect, given the fact that everyone else is taking reductions as well. But in most part, they're based on requests for services that have already taken place.
Do you have any plans for the Telecommunication Information Council? I'd heard that you might be considering eliminating it.
Yes. Yeah, we plan to submit legislation to eliminate the formal TIC structure. And the reason is very practical. It hasn't worked in the past, and I'm convinced it won't work in the future. There's no way the governor of Alaska is going to sit at the head of a table of commissioners and decide on whether Fish and Game should have a 9,600 baud modem or not. And although that the decision, some of the decisions are more significant than that, that is the level of problem that a committee like that has. The functions that are to be performed are all responsibilities of the Department of Administration. And so we're proposing to change, to eliminate the TIC in the Office of the Governor and reemphasize those responsibilities in the telecommunication portions of the DOA statute. And to implement the, or to strengthen and formalize the Information Systems Committee as a way for agencies to get together and bring their complaints or their requests and suggestions forward, especially the technical suggestions, so that they can be handled in a technical manner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I won't prolong this except to say I'm not sure we're headed in the right direction here. I think we have had a lot of very serious problems with our information management in the Department of Administration. I think a lot of work is needed, and that this is a very important service that has wide-reaching effects on the efficiency and performance of all the agencies, and so I'm quite concerned about the approach you're taking. I would appreciate the opportunity for a longer conversation at your earliest convenience.
Chair of the subcommittee, Representative Brown, you'll address those concerns.